welcome to a new episode of the IFTSO podcast, Focus Baltic Sea. Today we'll be talking about the Vasab Young Planners Summer School 2022 that took place from the 22nd to 26th of August at the Institute of Geography and Geology at the University of Greifswald. 20 students and young professionals from all over the Baltic Sea region and from different disciplines came to Greifswald to discuss the topic Sustainable Futures in the Baltic Sea Region. My name is Paula Prenzel. I am a junior professor of regional development at the University of Greifswald and part of the organizing team of the summer school. I'm also involved in the IFTSO, where I'm part of the cluster on spatiotemporal patterns. The summer school was organized by the Institute of Geography at the University of Greifswald and in cooperation with the Federal Ministry for Housing, Urban Development and Building, the Federal Institute for Research on Building, Urban Affairs and Spatial Development, and VASAB. VASAB is the organization that initiated the summer school, and I am now talking to Liene Gaujunette from the VASAB Secretariat. Liene, can you explain what VASAB is?
Thank you, Paula. It's a pleasure to be here. So at first I have to explain the abbreviation, I guess. And VASAB stands for Vision and Strategies Around the Baltic Sea. And it is a cooperation among the ministries responsible for spatial planning in the Baltic Sea region. The cooperation started in the early 90s and it was initiated by Sweden. And the main aim of VASAB cooperation today is to ensure knowledge exchange and policy options in spatial planning particularly. But we work with urban-rural development and networking topics, as well as we look into physical, digital and also energy connectivity and accessibility in the region. VASAB also cooperates with HELCOM to support coherent maritime spatial planning in the region, as well as it cooperates with ESPAN to develop and maintain a territorial monitoring network for the Baltic Sea region. And last but not least, I would like to mention here the policy area spatial planning, within which VASAB acts as a coordinator as part of the EU strategy for the Baltic Sea region.
So VASAB is actually a pretty big player in spatial development in the Baltic Sea region, maybe perhaps the biggest, right? And it's involved in lots of different things. So how come there is a VASAB summer school? How did this start? And what is the aim of it?
Yeah, so similarly as in planning on a local scale, it's very important that we consider different perspectives and different opinions. And of course, youth is a very important player, meaning that they're going to be the future inhabitants of our region. So we have to have their perspective in terms of what kind of future we want for the Baltic Sea region. So in 2019, Sweden was chairing VASAB cooperation. And at that time, they initiated that we involve youth and have more input from youth in VASAB's work. And that's how we came up with the very first VASAB summer school, which took place in the Adam Mickiewicz University in Poznan. And as it was such a great success, we thought it's a great tradition to maintain. And it's a nice way to have input and youth voice on macro regional scale and have their insight on how the future could be more sustainable.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. And when my colleagues and I at the Institute of Geography saw the call for being able to perhaps organize the next summer school, we were really excited because, of course, the Baltic Sea is very important for Greifswald. The University of Greifswald is so strongly entwined with the Baltic Sea region historically and also with numerous initiatives that we have, of course also the IFTSO, and that sort of enables us to bring together a lot of different research and expertise on this. So we were really excited and thought we could offer a very engaging program, and we're very happy to actually be able to organize it. So the overarching theme that we picked for the summer school this year is sustainable futures for the Baltic Sea region. And we wanted to invite participants to think really broadly and creatively and to engage with a vision of what they would want the Baltic Sea region to look like in the future. And all in all, we had 20 participants who came to Greifswald. We came from Estonia, Latvia, from Poland, from Sweden. Lithuania, Germany, Finland. So we're really like an interdisciplinary international group. And it was open to master students, but also for young professionals. And we had quite a few junior researchers or PhD students from lots of different fields. There were spatial planners and architects, geographers, people who studied engineering or anthropology. So we really brought together a very diverse group of people. All the participants were then allocated to a thematic group. And in that group, they worked on a project that they configured to be one of the biggest sustainability challenges for the Baltic Sea region. And they are presenting in front of an expert jury at the end of the summer school what they have developed. And between, they received input lectures from experts and also advice from mentors and other guests. And now we finally want to give the word to some of these participants and actually let them describe what they have been working on during this week. The five groups will join me one by one and have the chance to give some insights on their work. Welcome, Group 1. Please introduce yourselves.
Hello, I am Nusrat. I'm originally from Bangladesh, but I'm studying at the Swedish University of Agricultural Science in Sweden.
Hello, hi, I'm Katlin, and I am from Estonian University of Life Sciences.
Hello, I'm Nino from Georgia originally, but currently living in Sweden from Georgian Institute of Public Affairs.
Hello, everybody. I am Dana, and I am from Latvia, and I study at the Latvia University of Life Sciences and Technologies.
Thanks. So the topic of your group is climate change impacts on human settlements. That is a big topic. What sustainability challenge have you been discussing this week, and why is it so important for the Baltic Sea region?
Right, that's absolutely correct. It's a very challenging topic, and not only for us, but for the whole world right now, I suppose, and not only right now, but the last two decades. So we've been wondering, we had many different ideas, many crazy ideas, starting from planting the seed, finished with vertical farming, but we somehow decided that maybe the most challenging part would be to organize already existing infrastructure in a more sustainable way. So we thought of how to make already existing buildings in the city, maybe from the Soviet times, rundown districts, more sustainable. So with that idea in mind, we had a innovative thinking. We tried to introduce all of our knowledge, include all the concepts, and we came up with the idea of rooftop planning for Baltic Sea region, which we think is a good project because it adds fun, of course, and it's very nice in terms of design, also very sustainable. And we would like to create the policy regulation guidelines that might be helpful not only for the particular city that we have in mind, but also for the whole region in the long run.
So what are some of the advantages of planting on roofs?
Well, the green roofs are... it's not just like for environmental purposes, but also for social. Green roofs can be, there like are three main types of green roofs. They can be intensive, extensive, and semi-intensive. And it's a great area where the people can relax. It's a great place for the community. And also for the ecological aspects, green roofs create a new habitat for birds or insects.
Yeah, so that's really like a multimodal thing, right? It has a lot of different things. And do you have any specific ideas that you have developed on how to bring this project to life? Like, what could we actually do?
Yeah, we were thinking about implementing different kind of like rooftop projects in the small city, small town in Estonia. It's Jõgeva, and it is many Soviet time buildings, and it is a rundown town. And we were thinking that maybe we can bring something new into this town because people there are not really fond of every kind of development. But this rooftop project will be something really understandable. something simple and easy and not too huge and big plan which would look too outlandish for them.
Right, even if I remember on the first day we were told that we can go as utopic as we can, right? We can introduce as many ideas as we can, but we still decided to start from something really implementable, tangible and practical that can actually turn into the real life project further on. So we didn't want to stay too abstract or like too big, but like small changes, like big changes start from small steps, right? So that's a small step that we have a vision of that, that the small step might lead to the big, big changes further on.
We always thought that from the beginning of our starting the project, we always thought that, okay, we should start with some simple things, which is really applicable and which will look something like, which will be simple, but applicable and we can do it. Like, we can think so many things like climate change and human settlements. It's a very big issue, but we want to do so many things in together. What we used to do before when we were like a bachelor's student, that we want to do everything so ambitious. But in that project, we always, all of us were agreed that, okay, let's do something very simple, but obviously applicable. So that was the motive of our project to turn into a rooftop garden.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense because we often tend to be paralyzed by the immensity of the challenges, right? So breaking it down into something manageable is actually a really important step in bringing these ideas to life. Very interesting, thank you. Hello, group two. Introduce yourselves for me, please.
Hello, Paula. I'm Amina. I'm from Brunei, actually, but I study here in Rostock. And I'm happy to be here because I'm able to make networking and expanding my knowledge and learning from others. So it has been a very great experience for me. I'm currently a PhD student at the University of Rostock, but previously I did my master in water and coastal management and my bachelor in oceanography.
Hi, my name is Edgar. I'm an actual spy here because I'm not kind of the urban planner type, but I'm an architect. I study at Riga Technical University. This year I will do my last semester in master's. And yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Hey, so my name is Bosinola and I'm from Linköping University in Sweden. I'm a master's student. And my major is strategic urban and regional planning. I had my background in urban and regional planning. And right now, I'm in the summer school, and it has been a huge experience to mix with people with different backgrounds.
Nice. So the topic of your whole group is vulnerability of the marine and coastal environment. That's a big topic. So what sustainability challenge have you been discussing now this week, and why is this so important for the Baltic Sea region?
We discuss primarily on eutrophication, and we also learn a bit more in detail from the input lecture in our visit at the fisherman village. So that was nice, but we also think it's important to know that this problem is not just locally, but it's affecting the whole of Baltic Sea region. And the fact that Baltic Sea is such a small and closed sea shared by so many nations, and we know the impact of eutrophication affects both aquatic life and the people, livelihood and recreational uses. So we think that this challenge is quite important to be tackled at all levels.
Yeah, I'm not sure if all of our listeners are going to know what eutrophication is. Can you explain in really simple terms what that means?
Yeah, in a simple term, it's when you have excess nutrients flowing into the aquatic ecosystem. And this can cause phenomena such as algal bloom sometimes. And it means that when the algal bloom grow and they can limit light to the life under the ocean, under the sea. And also it can use up a lot of oxygen when they decompose, and it can lead to situation of hypoxia, which is not suitable for fish, for example. Eutrophication from our research so far, we found out that the source is mainly from agriculture. So we put a lot of thoughts into trying to solve this challenge, and agriculture was the best practice so far, for example.
Yeah, you already mentioned now you thought about this a lot, but what can we actually do to improve the situation? Like, where do we start?
I mean, we've thought about it, we've critically think about this, and we came up with a strategy, a governance strategy, because we believe that when we have a good governance in place, it's easier to tackle this. And we've thought about the multi-level governance, from the local level to the medium, then to the high level. The local level consists of actors from the farmers and others, that means the citizens in general. And then the middle level, we have the civil society, we have the academias, we have businesses coming together to share the ideas, to collaborate. And then we have the high level, which are the political community, because after all, they'll be the one to bring it into legislations, they'll be the one to promote these things. So we thought that when we have good governance in place, then we can achieve this. And the major outcome of this governance is to have like cooperation and collaboration between the top-down and the bottom-up actors. So that's...
That seems like, I mean, it makes a lot of sense, right? It's a problem that affects us all, and so everyone needs to be involved to solve it. But it's also very challenging to get everyone to collaborate. Have you thought of anything that we could do?
Yes, we've thought about this, and we came up with a strategy. We called it, we named it edutainment, which means education and entertainment. We have strategy of bringing entertainment, and then in the means of entertaining people, we want to educate them. Take, for instance, the farmers or the citizens, other citizens that we refer to, people who are not knowledgeable enough about this eutrophication thing, we had a campaign, like a poster beside the Baltic Sea, where they are like looking at it, they can be so informed that, okay, this problem is going on, and then this is what we need to do as individuals, because I believe in behavioral change can also help in this. And then for the middle level, the civil society, the businesses, academia, they can always come on a survivor island that we've like coined out. We have like a survival island where you bring all of them together to have like a talk and share ideas, and then we put it on TV shows or YouTube videos where people can listen to them, leave comments, share ideas together. And then we talked about bringing the politicians too for a day, like putting the politicians in the farmers' shoe. We named it like Farmer in a Day, putting the politician in the farmers' shoes, bring them to the farm to experience what is going on, and then to use this medium to educate them that you need to promote more of organic agricultural practices. So
that is such a fun idea. So you're really like combining reality TV with a really educational purpose. Yeah, very nice. Is there anything else that you've discussed that you want to showcase?
Well, a bit more about the controversial subject, which is the survival island. It has been based on a historically famous reality show, Survivors. It's located in United States, but our survivor island will be a bit different. Of course, it's located in the Baltic Sea. We have a lot of islands for that. And the main topics would be, again, like to get this entertainment out of it all, but at the same time, try to approach it with a more educational side, for example.
And then I would like to add to what I said, the farmer in a day, putting the politician in farmer's shoes, that we meant is to just promote, because when you check the percentage of the pollution in the Baltic Sea is from agricultural practices, according to what we read. And we think that when we promote more sustainable agricultural practices, then at least to an extent, we can reduce this problem. And to do that, we need legislations from the political, we need funding, we need to bring them on board to participate in this engagement thing.
Just to add on that point, another action we discussed also through these interactive activities we thought out to promote, hopefully something like public-private partnership will come out of it, where, you know, sustainable farming or sustainable agriculture can be promoted, can be encouraged for smart farming, for example, hydroponics, aquaponics, this type of system which can be further encouraged in Baltic Sea. And also organic fertilizer, we learned that it's actually a very good alternative to normal fertilizer. So these are examples of the actions that or outcomes that we expect out of this program we created.
Great. Thank you very much. That sounds like a very intensive and far-reaching program. So thanks for sharing that. Hi, welcome group 3. Can you introduce yourselves?
Hi, my name is Ulrika. I'm from Finland, but I live in Sweden now and I'm studying human geography.
Hi, I'm Arta. I'm from Latvia and I work in a municipality.
Hi, I'm Nabil. I'm from Pakistan, but I'm studying in the Estonian Academy of Arts.
Hi, I'm Bartosz. I'm working in a small urban planning office in southern Poland.
Thanks. So the topic of your group is demographic challenges and inclusive societies. That's a big topic. So what have you been working on for the last week? So which sustainability challenge have you been discussing and why is that one so important in the Baltic Sea region?
For the topic, we were looking at specifically how the demographic situation is changing in the Baltic Sea region and how our question or the idea of inclusive society is very much dependent on demographic distribution or equal demographic distribution, which led us to the point of highlighting the problem that the social fabric or the urban fabric of certain cities that compile up Baltic Sea region are very much fragmented in a sense that these cities have pockets of spaces where a lot of people are sort of grouped together or united or consolidated while the rest of the city is sort of detached from certain pockets of such sort. So our idea was to work on ways and means into first identifying the problem and going to the root cause of the problem and later looking at how to tackle these problems, because for us, like, problem solving is very integral, because if you don't go to the root cause of the problem, you cannot really find a meaningful solution, and most of the solutions then remain on the surface of such problems.
And so what are some of the root causes that you've identified?
One of the main ones that we will be working on is loneliness, that people feel lonely, and that is one of the reasons why they are excluded from society. And that is because of different kind of factors, age, physical abilities, people who come from different countries and don't have friends in the neighborhood, or young mothers who spend a lot of time with their children and are also detached from the workplaces and friends. So yeah, we are looking for solutions to change this feeling so people who are living in a neighborhood don't feel alone but feel included into the society.
Yeah, so basically what we did was that we identify two groups just to ease into looking into the situation. So the one first group we are looking at is, or the first situation is that there are less people, less diversity and more aging and less birds. And on the other hand, there are more people coming from different backgrounds and more like a balanced age group ratio. However, these sort of groups are never merging together, or they are not interacting with one another, which means that they sort of create a society which is homogeneous. And our vision is to create the society that's heterogeneous, which sort of leads towards an idea of a inclusive society. However, as a consequence of the current heterogeneous situation, we are also sort of experiencing this idea of isolation, and not just the isolation of people, but also isolation of neighborhoods where these people are living. And for us, the like really going down towards the unit of neighborhood in the entire Baltic Sea region is very important, because we need to look at the fact that the entire Baltic Sea region is composed of countries, which are themselves composed of urban and rural areas. However, we know that urban areas are getting denser and denser, and more like countries are now being represented not just by their rural areas, but urban areas play a big role in creating the identity of this in like a particular country. And then the urban areas are composed of certain neighborhoods. So if, say, for example, one neighborhood is not working together with the rest of the city, you cannot call that particular city functional if you have a part that's not joined with the social fabric or the urban fabric of the city. So that's why our idea is to look at into neighborhoods and see what's happening with them right now, how are they represented, what is their identity, how their identity is being manufactured, and then figure out spatial and temporal solutions that could be, that could incite a change or that can change the status quo of what's happening on ground right now.
So what kind of solutions have you thought of?
Yes, so we were thinking about accessibility. So physical accessibility in how, for example, older people, they have opportunities to move within their neighborhoods, so they can visit different parts of it and not only go to places that you need to, like grocery stores, but also visit gardens and other community spaces. And also, for example, mothers with children, they have a space to move with their children in. For example, you have sidewalks and they have to be big enough for their mothers, like for mothers to be with their children and walk around, and these kinds of solutions. Yeah.
So these are very local things, right? So I think I'm getting the sense that a lot of your discourse is about sort of, yes, it's the whole Baltic Sea region, but people only experience their local neighborhood, right? So I think it's a very interesting starting point. Is there anything else that you've thought of improving?
No matter what kind of solutions you implement, it's very important to ask the people what they actually need in the neighborhood. So in a, we want to have like a guidebook or a pathway for municipalities how to work in these kind of neighborhoods. And the first question would be what you need, and then from there goes the other things. So maybe it's a sidewalk, maybe it's a park, maybe it's a place where to meet. We have also found some good examples in other countries that have worked in such a way, for example, libraries that are a meeting point, and etc.
And we want to make sure that also when stakeholders talk with people in these local areas and then implement based on what they want, implement solutions, from there it's also it keeps on working afterwards. So then they keep checking that, is it going well, is it functioning in the way that the people wanted it to. So the solution is like it's developing all the time.
The other important point of our project is the challenge of changing the perception of the such neighborhoods, because there is an image that such neighborhoods are like bad, they are not functioning well, and everything is wrong with them. But we think that this is not true. Like in every neighborhood has some positive aspects to them, and the people that are living them there can also be happy with that.
Yeah, and a couple of examples that we can quote right now is the situation that's happening in Denmark right now, where there's a specific category of list that falls or that could be deployed to categorize these neighborhoods as ghettos, which is actually the ghetto listing in Danish municipality, which is an official document that categorizes such sort of neighborhoods depending on certain facts or figures that they find from the from the situation of the people over there. Say for example, you have income inequality, you have income, you have crime ratios, you have employment ratios. So these three or four categories then start creating the identity of a particular neighborhood. The situation is somewhat same, however, it does not really take in the aspect of figures. But say for example, in Sweden you have no-go zones. In Finland you have a lot of suburban areas where people start coming into and start forming this particular bubble. So our idea is basically to just have like a counter narrative or an alternative discourse into changing the perception of these neighborhoods by not associating them with certain fact or figure that starts forming their identity, but also to add up more facts that represent another side of the neighborhood, which is not based on crime statistics or low income or does not have to do with employment, but maybe with other form of data or statistic that could play a role in changing the reputation, because changing the repute in a nation's lens would be really important into the aspect of reintegration, because this reputation is also something that's is a social construct. And yeah, it's more like a it is more like a top-down approach, but it is also very passive. So you're not intervening directly in such sort of nomenclature formation, but you are trying to influence the perception of media, or like, say, for example, the perception of how a neighborhood is labeled in terms of a signboard or like a bus stop or newspapers or local media.
So that also means we might need to talk differently about inclusion in order to actually achieve inclusion. I think that's a very interesting point. Thank you guys very much. Welcome, Group 4. Please introduce yourselves.
Yeah, hi. My name is Katharina Cilek. I'm from Berlin, Germany, and I'm working as a research associate at ICAM, the Institute of Climate Protection, Energy and Mobility, and I'm working in the mobility department.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm Habib, and I'm from Finland, actually. I am a doctoral researcher in the fourth year of my studies now, writing my thesis, and I work in sustainable finance topics. Yeah.
So the topic of your group was transforming mobility. What sustainability challenge have you been discussing this week, and why is it so important here in the Baltic Sea region?
We were surprised that we found really quickly a topic that we all agreed on, because we have really different backgrounds. So we are a group of four and have like economics, and also Tina and Axel from different backgrounds. And we focused mainly on the question of how accessible is the Rail Baltica. So Rail Baltica is like a train line that will be constructed in the near future. And we faced a lot of challenges there in the Baltic states, because the rural area is not really accessible to this train line. So you have problems of how will the people get there from the rural area to the train station. And it's really the challenge to make it sustainable, right? Because you have like nearly over 70% in the Baltic states are using car on a daily basis. And to get these people to a more sustainable way to go to this really good train line, that would be, in my case, or in my opinion, or our opinion, the most sustainable challenge.
So you're basically saying it's one thing that we have a great train line, yeah, but if everybody has to take a car to get to the train line, then it's not very sustainable.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's very interesting. And what ideas did you develop to address that?
It's quite interesting, because I think this is quite new to me. I'm coming from economics background, but it's also not just a social challenge, it's also economic. So we looked into the data, and it said in Rail Baltica that about 10 million persons will be using this line in a year. And we felt, okay, there are more people, I mean about 2 million persons live in the rural area around these Baltic states. If we can get them more on board, then it becomes even more economically viable for the Rail Baltica. And we felt, okay, how do we do this? Statistically, in Finland, for example, about 60% of persons that own car drive it alone. That's not sustainable for our time. So one of the things we considered is, okay, how do we make people use less of cars? Then we thought about having a multimodal center. In some locations in these rural areas, of course, we cannot have it in all of the rural areas, but we try to centralize it in ways that other smaller rural areas can access it. Then in these multimodal area centers, we are going to use mainly electric buses. This is the most sustainable approach. And then we encourage shared cars. We want to believe that most of the shared cars will be electric. So we are going to encourage partners, private companies, to invest in this kind of cars. And in places where we have about 20 kilometers or 30 kilometers, scooters and bicycle will be used, so that people can go into these multimodal centers. Of course, the multimodal centers will be designed to address the needs of the people. we looked into Rail Baltica and found that they already talked about the groups that will be targeted with this Rail Baltica. We talked about families. We saw that the economic people, these are business people, the tourists, the educational people, the students who will be going through Rail Baltic to go, for example, you can be in Latvia. I want to go in schools in Tallinn. It's more easier for you. And also, we talk about the people who need healthcare. Sometimes you are living in Latvia and you know that there's a good dentist in Tallinn. So, and now, if you live in the rural areas, you are facing a challenge to access the Rail Baltica that takes you to Tallinn. So we want to remove that hassle for these people. Yes.
Yeah, great. So it's really a multidisciplinary aspect, right? Because what you're saying already is sort of the network effects.
Yes.
It's not
yes.
just about accessibility and sustainability and greener transport.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's also about getting people to where they need to be
yes.
to improve their quality of life.
Yes. Yes.
Maybe I can add something. So for us, it was really important to see what the user needs are. So mostly when you speak about planning or planning the rural area, I think often the opinion of people living in this rural area is not recognized enough. And we try to get idea of the solution of these multimodal centers really from a point of view that is maybe not really mentioned enough in the research area. So for me, it was kind of interesting to collect the ideas of these user groups and then just also exchange with you, for example, what are the needs, because we all have different experience in mobility, right? So
it's like she said, it's quite a very good exercise for us, because we had to go into demographics of people who live there. So for example, you have the old, their needs are different. The family who might, for example, be traveling with kids, infants, we are thinking of a bus that is designed to have enough space so that if you want to travel with your bicycle, you can have a space to put it. If you have a kid that needs stroller, you can put it. If you need mobility aids for the old, they can easily travel. We had a member of our group, Axel. He was talking about his grandfather who has to travel from Lepaya to Riga. And for over 10 years, he has been traveling by car. The grandmother has to drive him there. But if we can provide a more sustainable and more convenient, so we are not just talking about sustainability, we have to address the social and economic needs of these people as well. We talked also about the business people. I, for example, have been in situations where I have to travel and I still have to work at the same time. You don't want to miss your official assignment, so you need to have meetings. So if I'm going to Tallinn and I have a train from Riga at 12 o'clock, for example, but I need 2 hours from the multimodal center to the Rail Baltica in Riga, but I also have a meeting at 8 o'clock. I don't want to be in my room at 8 because I might not have enough time to move around. So we are going to design the multimodal center in such a way that there is shared office space also. So you can almost be on the run and walk as well. So it's going to make sure that people's needs are taken care of.
Yeah. Great. Thank you very much for sharing these ideas. Welcome, Group 5. Thanks for being here. Maybe introduce yourselves to get started.
Right. My name is Augustas Lapinskas. I come from Lithuania. Right now I study my master's in Estonia. I come from architecture and urban planning.
Hello, this is Paulina. I'm from University of Economics in Katowice. I'm from Poland. I'm also an academic teacher and at the same time a PhD student. My minor expertise and my minor area of expertise is post-industrial areas.
Hello, it's Walid here. I'm from Jordan and currently I'm living in Szczecin in Poland. I did my master there in civil engineering, major in international construction management, and right now I'm working in a construction company in sustainable and green building department as a sustainable certificate specialist.
The topic of your group was future-proof energy systems. What sustainability challenge have you been discussing this past week, and why is it so important for the Baltic Sea region?
I think right now we're just facing the decarbonization process in many countries of the Baltic Sea region. So it's really important to make the just transition process as smooth and easy as it could be. So we're just thinking about the life recycle thinking approach. So we're trying to combine land recycle and especially green land recycle to make and to settle energy power plants, especially solar power plants and also wind farm, to recycle the land so they can be reused, especially they can be reused brownfields. So it ensure another green fields at the rural areas for example, food production.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what is a brownfield? It's a post-industrial landscape that where some fossil fuels gathered there or heavy industry happening. And after the phase down, these areas stay there with whole infrastructure becoming redundant. And it's not only physical infrastructure becoming redundant, it's also social infrastructure, which is highly skilled specialists and all legal and municipality systems created. Everything is deteriorating. And to prevent this, the social crisis happening, and also to reuse these assets, social and physical, we introduce renewable energy systems in these areas just to use the materials and yeah, and these non-physical assets again.
Yeah, and when you are asking about why is this so important in the Baltic Sea region, I think that we have in post-social cities and post-social countries, we have so many brownfields because our economy was based on the industry for so many years that we already had so many brownfields, post-industrial brownfields, and we will have it more and more because of the just transition. So it's really important to reuse it and not taking another area because the area is not resources that never ends.
Yeah, so it actually helps in several ways, right? It reuses something that is already there, which also prevents us from...
Why not use it?
Exactly, it's not being used right now, and we don't need somewhere else that is maybe still nature or whatever else, or that could be food production area for energy production, right? Yeah, so how were you thinking about doing this? What sort of approaches have you developed?
Well, firstly, we've been analyzing some case studies in Poland, Germany, some in Michigan as well, and Estonia. And one takeaway from these studies is that there are some obstacles that these projects face. They are being implemented, but the processes are not the easiest. So what could be provided is this action plan that we propose, which includes some more focused research on the topic, especially brownfields themselves, and some legal framework to make processes faster, easier, maybe more commercially convenient, and so on.
Yeah, we have also noticed that there's no one whole and complete map of brownfields that it's in Baltic Sea region, in whole countries of Baltic Sea region. So there is a huge need in this area to create one whole map of brownfields and maybe just create some kind of platform with stakeholders and some smaller companies or maybe even local society could just participate in the process of let's say just transition, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they can just feel they have impact on the environment and ecology. They're just part of the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're touching upon a lot of different things there, right? Like also the question of, do we know how many brownfields there are, where they are? So it's also a question of allocation, right? Because if maybe it is something that somebody could reuse, but you don't know that it's available. So that's a very, like at the core of sustainability, right, to try and reuse what we already have. Yeah, is there anything else that you wanted to add on sort of your actions or?
Mm-hmm. Maybe also a bit on just transition. A big part of this would inevitably be re-education of specialists in the area, because for most of the communities of these monofunctional industrial cities that are phasing down, this is a terrifying process to go through, because they have high skills, they are specialists, and now they're losing their jobs being highly skilled specialists, and that's crazy. So what we also want to systemize is these re-education programs in these areas, and also communication, just to have less of terror in the process itself.
Yeah. What I think one of the stakeholders, I think, should be really helpful in that, the academic environment, especially universities, might be really helpful in the process of re-education and gaining new high-tech skills. So the most important thing here when we are talking about loses jobs and the terrifying process is increasing awareness for the local societies, that it's not terrifying and it's gonna be okay. We're just gonna try to use it and find ourselves in the new reality. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's also about social change and of course trust in improvements and being taken care of. Right. Yeah. Very interesting. Very very multidimensional topic. Thank you, guys. As the experiences from the groups show, there is still a lot to do in order to move towards a sustainable future. And in the summer school, we've been talking about the sustainability, right? But the summer school is a temporary event. It's just 1 week. So from a Vasa perspective, Lena, do you see any lasting impact coming out of the summer school?
Well, definitely. First of all, I have to mention that the one of the ideas to have the summer school is also to build the next generation of planners network. So it means that the young professionals who will be planning the Baltic Sea region in the upcoming years and decades and even longer, they have a chance to come together and meet each other. And next time they have to think about the cross-border issues when they're planning in Latvia or Sweden or Finland, they will know someone to call and ask and invite to work together. And in that way, they will be aware of the issues across the border. And it's more likely that jointly they will come up with more sustainable solutions. Secondly, of course, from the Vasa perspective, we want them to know more about the work VASAB is doing and how the macro-regional cooperation in general looks like in region. And I think in that sense, we're also succeeding, that they will be aware of the platform where they can always return to and think of ways of moving forward together. And that I think is also a great chance if we think of the context of sustainable development agenda, which says that we have to have strong partnerships and cooperations. That's something we build here. And last but not least, I hope that not only for me and for the VASAB team, but also for the participants, this event has served as an inspiration and as a way to open up for a wider perspective that will help to bring back home new ideas and new ways of being better in planning for the future of the region.
We of course also wanted to hear from our participants what they are taking away from the summer school. So here are their responses.
What am I taking away from the summer school? I think a couple of pencils and some calories.
For me, I think it is like the real practical experience, like how to cooperate with many people with so different backgrounds. Because, yeah, of course, we know that in usually like in a theoretical basis that we should like cooperate with different people. But now we have like real practice with it, like how to solve special problems with so different people.
Okay. Urban planners are really smart and people with a wide perspective, and they're also really serious.
There are multiple things that I have acquired from the summer school. First of all, that is amazing ladies, and get to know absolutely first-class professionals, but also like very nice humans. And also the environment is very welcoming, and all the people are very nice to each other.
For me, I would say two things that really I will take away with me. The first is networking. So there is so many people with very, very interesting background and different discipline. So networking, so perhaps for my future research, they're interested and I'm interested in their research. And also the second thing is the process of working together from all these different backgrounds. So this is a process that you don't get to experience every day unless you put people from so many countries together in one room. And for me, this is really good learning, because everything takes time, progress, patience, listening, compromise. All this is part of really important learning.
I'm really grateful for this experience because due to COVID, I couldn't do my exchange year in Germany. And to come to Germany for like 1 week, it's also an exciting experience for me. And I met so many interesting people from different backgrounds, and it totally broadened my horizons.
When I came in Greifswald in this summer school, I was planning to ride the bicycle with rest of my members, and I thought that, okay, I need to do it anyhow, and I didn't give up. That is the best thing I did here, and I learned bicycle riding, and now I can do well. So my message is that don't give up on anything. You can do everything.
I also feel that I'm learning a lot from these people. As my personal field is mostly the design of buildings or objects or structures. And now here I face some new concepts, some new terminology, like socio-technical systems, institutional systems, and things like this. Multi-level perspective also was new for me. Thank you. I'm learning a lot from you.
During the course of the summer school, I have learned a lot, like I said on the first day. And basically, it's nice to mix with people from different disciplines to view one of the challenges of biology from, for example, I've learned one of the challenges from the biological view, from the cultural background, from architecture, from design side. And it's kind of a win for me. And then secondly, the networking. To mix up with people, to network with them, to learn about their culture, language, their traditions. It's one of the things that we need to do as a planner, because I am a planner, so it's good to learn those. And another that I've gathered is the brilliant ideas that I've gathered with that will serve as a stepping stone for me in my career. And then the last that I would love to say is the German food. The Germans have a very nice food. Yes, that's what I have to say. Thank you.
I'm totally amazed by the ideas that I really can take home and really work with. So it's amazing how I already spoke about how all our different backgrounds come together on this topic, and it's amazing what the results are. And I really, really loved it to be here. It was a wonderful time, and I will take really a lot of ideas back home.
We have started very, very many beautiful friendships here, so I think it will be last even if we end the summer school. But frankly, I don't want to leave at all, because this is really, it's really great opportunity and really beautiful experience to gain a wider perspective and just try to thinking outside of the frames and just going out of the box and just thinking something completely different, that we are work separately, everything have different fields, and now we're just going together to the same room and just working together on the one whole common project, and we're working under the pressure, especially under the pressure of time, and we try to analyze so many research papers and documents, and we try to combine everything and combine our different point of views, and we'll try to find compromise. That's really great experience, and that's really opening. Yeah.
I think this experience has really shown how important it is to have multiple perspectives, because we're dealing with issues that affect all of us, and we think about them in different ways because we have different backgrounds. So it's very important then that when you tackle any of the issues that we're facing in the Baltic Sea region, that we really bring in different people with different opinions and different backgrounds to have solutions that fit everyone.
I had not so little expectations, but not so high as well. But it's been a very wonderful experience for me, because I get to meet people from different backgrounds and try to see that looking at sustainability from my perspective has been quite myopic, because I was not really considering other aspects of it. And for example, we had this discussion by the bay of the Baltic Sea, and we're talking about how this grass is disappearing from the waterways. I have been working on sustainability issues and how biodiversity loss has caused, for example, COVID that we had recently. And I couldn't understand really how the effect of human has affected this, but I got to understand that. So from a biological perspective, now I understand that. And to be honest, I've met some very cool people, not just in my group, but of course, generally. We have shared maybe a lifetime experience, and we'll keep the contact and connections.
Yeah, I think the most valuable part is meeting people. Lectures are also very interesting and etc., but meeting people and talking how different things are approached in their country, how they are talking about different kind of topics in their country, how they find solutions to specific problems, also in spatial planning, that's the most interesting part for me.
What am I taking away from the summer school is certainly like a reflection into how strategic planning of a certain area actually works. It's important to see that what's the structure behind like a research-oriented university, but also that university opening up into accommodating people from very diverse backgrounds as well. And then it's very important to see how they provide like a situation or circumstance where all the people are not just formally sharing their knowledge experiences, but like informally having these discussions, which I feel like really adds up to the knowledge production situation. And it really allows a university as well to sort of open up from its like very sort of a conventional or orthodox framework and accommodate more diverse opinions as well. So I think that this is like a think tank situation happening, little think tank, mini summer camp.
And I'm taking away, like, I think one of the biggest gains from this summer school is to meet people from such different places. And even though it's just the Baltic Sea country region, we have met here people from different countries, like their origin.
And I think in this case that all my teammates are agree with me. The first thing that I have learned in this summer school that is how to share our ideas together, and also how to exchange them and to share our experience together, just like to improve everything and to combine all my ideas and experience just to achieve one goal. Is the main goal of this summer school is just like to get to the best results is possible to get in this in this work. And I think, yes, I would take all the experiences that I have got here in the summer school for me in my work to also share it and tell everyone that is to my colleague, to my teammates as well. And also I would try to work on this more in the future. I don't know where exactly, maybe in my work, maybe in the university, in the academic way. And try also to share it with the junior students, just to take this way, you know, to go ahead for it in the future and work on it. Yeah, that's all.
I think the most important thing that I'm taking away from the summer school is, like, it was already mentioned, the cooperation between people from different countries. Everyone has different ideas, different perspectives and experiences, and I think it's really worth to get to know it, to understand it better, and then we can try to implement it in our countries back home.
So one more thing that I've learned, and I think everyone needs to know, that nothing is impossible.
I think these statements pretty much speak for themselves. And from my perspective as an organizer, I was really impressed by the motivation and the enthusiasm that everyone brought to the summer school. It was such a pleasure to see students and young professionals discussing and sharing and growing across national and disciplinary boundaries. Personally, I believe that it's these kinds of discussions and networks that will prove invaluable to address the pressing sustainability challenges that we face in the Baltic Sea region. I would like to thank everyone who was involved and supported this event, as well as all listeners. I hope you enjoyed this latest episode of the IFTSU podcast and hearing about the Vasa Young Planners Summer School 2022. You can find more information about IFTSU on the IFTSU website and also on social media channels, Twitter and Instagram, IFTSU Greifswald. Bye!